This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Today on the show, the Australian government wants Pacific workers to fill shortages on farms, but not everyone in the sector is keen on the idea.
Simply relying upon workers from around the world to operate our industries, our workplace, our companies is not a good model for the future.
And turning trash into treasure has become a winning business idea for a mum and daughter duo in Vanuatu. We'll hear about the challenges and successes they've found starting a store out of their home. And a South Korean cyclist pedaling all around the world has made her way to the Pacific. What struck her about the region?
I love their cover, easy cover, and one of the cover is different.
We'll hear more about Jinjiang's carver experience and journey later in the show. All that and more today. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. So glad to have your company. But first, Papua New Guinea's government has launched an investigation into the death of an Indonesian man allegedly shot while fishing in PNG waters. Indonesia, meanwhile, has responded with a diplomatic protest over not just this death, but also the detention of more than a dozen Indonesian fishermen in Papua New Guinea. PNG's Foreign Minister Justin Chichenko says an inquiry will determine the exact circumstances surrounding the shooting.
It is still an ongoing investigation. I have been, and my secretary has been, in contact with the Brigadier General, as well as the Indonesian High Commission, the Indonesian Embassy, to ensure we get the facts right first. There's a lot of stories going out there of what happened, and I would say over the next couple of days we'll have the truth of the matter exposed and reported about. Illegal fishing is a major, major problem in Papua New Guinea. And these two illegal Indonesian boats were apprehended in PNG waters. And I believe now those people are now in custody here in Port Moresby. They were on those boats. So the scenario is that let's find out the facts first. Let's not listen to rumours. And I'll be more than happy to, with my department and the Defence Department as well, come out with the facts in the next couple of days.
That was PNG Foreign Minister Justin Chichenko talking about that inquiry into that Indonesian fisherman's death. Meanwhile, Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong, who is also in PNG, says Australia is working with governments in the region to curb illegal fishing.
We've signed a new five-year deal with the Forum Fisheries Agency. The Pacific Island Forum focused on this. We've worked in the WTO with Pacific Island nations to reduce subsidies for illegal fishing to try and protect the peoples, the value of people's EEZ. And in government, what we have committed to do is doubling the aerial surveillance through the FFA to try and combat illegal fishing. And I think we've also committed to providing more Guardian class vessels, patrol boats, another one in addition to those which are being delivered. So we understand, leaving aside the detail of this incident, this is a really big issue for PNG, it's a really big issue for the region, it's a really important issue for both economic sovereignty but also food security.
That was Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong in Papua New Guinea there during her visit. Minister Wong also said Australia wants the closest possible relationship with Papua New Guinea. She will be heading to Timor-Leste tomorrow for further diplomatic talks.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
And now to Papua New Guinea's neighbour, Australia, which is also confronting its own problem with illegal fishing. The discovery of what appears to be an Indonesian fishing camp on Australia's northern coast has shocked locals and raised questions about the adequacy of coastal patrols. There's been a surge in Indonesian crews entering Australian waters to harvest marine life, but this is the first evidence of them actually reaching the coast in recent years. This report from Aaron Park.
When the ABC visited Niwollara Island in the remote North Kimberley last year, the national park was peaceful and pristine. The Guini traditional owners sampled bush fruits and helped archaeologists locate the remnants of seafood processing camps that were set up by visiting Asian fishermen in the 1800s.
In those days, some of our people used to talk the Indonesian way, talk in their language.
At that point, there was no hint of what was to come. A 21st century visit by Indonesian fishermen who appear to have entered the North Kimberley Marine Park earlier this year and set up camp on the island.
I've never ever seen them on the land or camping spots like this. This is obviously someone that's come in, set up camp for a week and dried their fish and then chuffed off again.
Steve Hinge and his wife discovered the campsite during a visit to Niwollara, also known as Sir Graham Moore Island, in May. The veteran skipper, who ran commercial fishing boats in northern waters for two decades, says it was a shocking sight.
In the corner there was a pile of rubbish, and it ended up being a lot of Indonesian products like water bottles, cigarettes, noodles and all sorts of things. And up on the rocks there was dried fish, a dried shark and various other bits and pieces to show that someone's spent a fair bit of time there. And I'd say they've probably been there, I don't know, maybe a week or so, because there's quite a lot of litter there. It wouldn't be a day camp, so it would have gone on for a long time, I think.
Steve Hinge reported the scene to federal authorities when they returned to shore and provided dozens of photos.
The authorities have obviously been doing a good job over the years keeping illegal fishing and the incursions like this back, but there's obviously been a breakdown or there's a weakness in the system to have allowed this to occur. I mean, I did report it to the Border Force, but I haven't heard anything back, so I've got no idea what they've done about it.
The number of Indonesian fishing boats illegally entering Australian waters has surged during the COVID pandemic, with tourism charters raising concerns about piracy and turtles found killed on remote atolls. But this is the first evidence of a crew reaching the Australian coast during the period. Local MP Neil Thompson says it shows worrying weaknesses in border security.
The challenge here is the number of boats that are starting to come down and the brazen activity that is going on along our coast. This is the problem because it poses such a huge biosecurity threat. It also impacts on our fragile and beautiful environment and it poses the national security risk. We must do more to stop this happening.
The Australian Border Force did not answer questions about the campsite but said in a statement that it coordinates regular patrols in the area. The WA Department of Biodiversity, Conservation and Attractions said it would soon be doing fauna surveys on Niwollara that would help identify any foreign species. Steve Hinge is already planning his next northern voyage and is hoping surveillance will have improved.
I mean, next thing you go down there, there'll be a few bits of tin and they'll be having a family there if we don't keep an eye on them. But I don't think we'll ever get to that level, but it is a concern and it's something that could grow quite easily if it's not clamped down pretty quick.
That was boat skipper Steve Hinge ending that report from Erin Park. You're listening to Pacific Beat right here on ABC Radio Australia. My name's Priyanka Srinivasan. Finding workers is more difficult than ever for Australian farmers. Unemployment is at a record low, and 2 years of COVID travel bans mean there are fewer backpackers here to pick fruit. The Australian government is looking to the Pacific to build up the workforce, but others are pushing for more domestic solutions. Kath Sullivan with this report.
The first of this season's mangoes are coming off the trees at Leo Skliros's farm outside Darwin.
Last few years we haven't had that much fruit, but this year we've got a bumper season ahead of us.
There's plenty of fruit, but not nearly enough pickers and packers.
At the moment I've got 32. I was told I'd have 50 today, so I'm 18 short today. I'll probably need to be at 90 next week, and I'm going to be struggling to get to 50.
Previously, backpackers required to work on farms to extend their stay would have filled some of these vacancies, but backpacker Izzy says she'd rather work on the grain harvest than pick fruit in order to meet the requirement.
I wouldn't work on a fruit picking farm, basically because the money's quite a lot lower and it's actually much more labour intensive work. Like, when you think about it, being sat in a tractor all day, it's not really hard work, it's long hours. But it's not like backbreaking labour, picking fruit.
Others, like Melina, prefer bar work.
If you have the opportunity to do a hospitality for your 88 days, it's easy. Like, my place is 2 minutes from the hostel and then I can still live in a city.
The mango industry says it needs 3,000 workers this harvest and it says realistically more of those will need to come from overseas. More broadly, Industry groups from the farming, food processing, convenience store and restaurant sectors estimate an extra 172,000 workers are needed from paddock to plate. The federal government's job summit is coming up and it's under pressure to find solutions. It's abandoned a coalition plan to create a new visa for foreign farm workers and instead says there's tens of thousands of workers in the Pacific ready to work in Australia. But Dan Walton from the Australian Workers Union says farmers can do a better job of attracting workers.
I think there is still an emphasis here for the farming community to take a little bit of responsibility here. They should be developing people to work in this industry, offering competitive wages and conditions to attract good labour and to keep them there.
The AWU is using next week's Job Summit to push for more training for Australian employees.
Simply relying upon workers from around the world to operate our industries, our workplace, our companies is not a good model for the future. And so we need to act a bit smarter. And so we said, let's have a look at bringing over skilled migrants on a more permanent basis, but have a responsibility and onus there for when you do that, that you're going to train someone up to be able to fill that role. Or if you can't do that, to contribute into a training fund to give the government the capacity to develop the skills that we need into the future.
In the Northern Territory, mango farmer Mitchell Curtis says that's not practical.
I'm living in a community that's got 8,000 people that can't even have their McDonald's open because there's not enough workers. How am I going to get a local to put next to someone from another country? It's got to be realistic. You can't blanket the whole country.
That was a Northern Territory mango farmer, Mitchell Curtis. Kat Sullivan with that report.
Understanding China
will go beyond the headlines of trade and politics.
Music is encouraged as an extracurricular activity.
We'll look at China's challenges
and triumphs.
Student-led groups have shown that they're smart, powerful and strategic.
And bring you the news from inside China.
What it's like to be a feminist in modern China.
Get the full story on the making of a superpower.
Watch China Tonight on ABC Australia. To find out broadcast times in your country, check out abcaustralia.net.au.
Hold the front page!
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia, and it's time to find out what's making news around the region. And I'm joined by Carl Evans, sorry, to do just that. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Priyanka.
Now, let's head to Taiwan, because there's a Palau delegation there, I understand, in quarantine. Why is that?
Yeah, they've run into a bit of trouble. So the nation's vice president and 8 other officials are in ISO after members of the delegation caught COVID. The VP arrived for an official 5-day visit on Saturday and was set to meet with the leader of Palau, but that never happened, with 2 members of the delegation testing positive on the Sunday. So,
oh dear.
As a result, yeah, Taiwan's foreign ministry said their schedule has been suspended for the time being.
And do we know how long they have to be in isolation for?
No, it's unclear that. So they've given no detail on how long they'll have to remain in the country. Taiwan's only said that they're being given the proper care. But it is understood Taiwan generally mandates several days of hotel quarantine or private home quarantine. I believe it's one of the few countries left that still has relatively strong restrictions in place, particularly for foreign arrivals.
Yes, and Palau is actually one of the few countries in the world that still recognises formal relations with Taiwan. One of only a few dozen, I think, 14 or so countries.
Yeah, that's right. So you'd have to think they're getting some first-class treatment, I'd imagine.
Yes, yes, yes. Now to Marshall Islands, which has been praised for its COVID response. Why is that?
Yeah, so what a turnaround. So US-based doctors have praised the Marshall Islands for what they consider an unprecedented response to its first COVID outbreak. So this is reported this morning by Island Business, and it comes after positive case numbers declined dramatically after what was a record-setting first 2 weeks. The country was recording above 1,000 daily cases last week, and John Hopkins University actually said it was a 7-day all-time record for the rate of infection.
Oh.
But as of yesterday, cases were back in the low hundreds.
Wow, and so do we know why it's dropped so dramatically? Why that response has been so good?
Yeah, it was a A bit of a radical strategy in some ways. So the US Center for Disease Control says they've exceeded expectations in the way they've delivered testing and treatment. And part of that was giving people the ability to go out and actually get medication instead of staying at home.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's actually not only is it drop deaths, but it's actually, it's minimized the symptoms a lot and minimized the spread. So they said that strategy's worked and it's proven to be world class.
Yes, that is good news. Now to some sports news, to the PNG Hunters. With its head coach parting ways with the team, what's happened?
Yeah, so PNG Hunters head coach Matt Church will not coach the side next season. Instead, he will lead the Brisbane Tigers after signing a 2-year contract, which will begin in 2023, so from next year. And that follows 3 seasons at the helm with the Hunters, which was obviously mainly spent in Australia due to the COVID pandemic.
And with that dramatic win over the weekend as well, wasn't it, the PNG Hunters? I mean, did Matt Church say, the coach say, why he wanted to leave?
Not really, but look, I imagine just having the chance of being closer to home would have a lot to do with it. He does have a lot of history with the Tigers. He coached the junior representative sides from 2013 to 2015 before later moving up the ranks to be an assistant coach with the Sunshine Coast Falcons. I also know he's a native Queenslander as well. I think he's from Brisbane, so I'm sure that the chance to spend more time on shore would have been enticing for him. But look, only 3 seasons with the Hunters, but, given he was the one who led them through the pandemic, so I'm sure it felt like a very long 3 seasons in some ways.
Yes, indeed. And does that mean, I guess, the spot's open now for the coach of PNG Hunters? We'll see who fills it up.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be interesting to see if it goes to an assistant or if they bring in somebody new. It's not too far removed since they won a premiership, so they're a pretty good program to coach.
Yes, let's see. Thank you, Kyle, for those stories. That was Kyle Evans bringing us the latest news from around the Pacific. But don't go anywhere because we've still got news for you here coming up on Pacific Beat. Would you like to visit the moon? Or how about live there? Well, you might have your chance because after 50 years, NASA is planning to send humans on the moon again. It's even aiming to send the first woman and person of color on the lunar surface.
But we're ready for the next stage. We're ready to have more inclusivity on the moon, more people go to the moon, more science to be done on the moon, and maybe even long-term living.
We'll hear more about that outer space adventure soon. I wouldn't mind visiting the moon, maybe not living there, but we'll see how far science advances. And just around the corner, we'll be catching up with a South Korean cyclist who's made it her mission to travel around the globe with just her pedals on her bike. She's now in the Pacific. We'll find out how she and her bike are faring. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday morning here on Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. A South Korean cyclist who is pedaling her way around the world has arrived in Vanuatu. Jin Jong has biked through 6 continents on her 9-year journey. She's in the Pacific now and has just finished touring Fiji. She spoke with our reporter Jordan Fennell about the warmth of the Pacific Islanders she's met and her new love of kava.
I love their kava. Fiji kava and Vanuatu kava is different. And also their kava bar is different. And that's really interesting to learn from me.
And when you were in Fiji, did you try a lot of kava?
I tried first with the family. So I learned about how to clap and get and drink and then how to treat. And then I visited the kava bar in Suva. And that's more like relaxing. We don't need to clap, more socializing. That's interesting. And in Vanuatu, I went to kava bar again. It's something different from Fiji that they just drink, just get from the bar and drink. And that's all. Like in Fiji, they sit around and drink on the basin. So that's really different. And also Vanuatu kava is more stronger.
So take me back to the start. You've been cycling around the world for a very long time now. And for listeners who may not have been following your journey, why did this all start? Why did you choose to bike around the world?
Because I want to explore the space, another planet, something. Then I was thinking, oh, maybe I want to learn about my planet, the Earth, first. So I started cycling around the world. And also, I love to meet people. I love to learn new culture. I love to explore and having adventure. And yeah, this is the main reason. And actually, one of the biggest main reason is to meet people all around the world, because every people has their own story. And quite often it's inspiring to just learn new different life.
Fiji was the first Pacific country that you've traveled to. How long were you there for?
I've been like 3 months. Quite a long time. So sometimes I have a YouTube channel, so I have to sit down and then edit. And then I moved very slowly, little by little.
And aside from Kava in Fiji, what was the highlight of being able to travel through Fiji on your bike?
I really love Fiji so much because of the people. People are very hospitality, that their hospitality is amazing. They always say blah, welcoming. And as a solo female, sometimes when people are so kind, actually it can be a bit challenging because there's also catcalling following me as well. But in Fiji, I don't need to worry about it. People are just kind. So I always feel more relaxing and I don't need to worry about, you know, they are welcoming. They are welcoming, it's a pure welcoming. And I love the people so much, their culture. So one time I was having rest at the supermarket and one lady came and asked me, would you like to have a tea at my house? So I just followed, pushing my bicycle, just it was behind. And then her son was climbed up coconut tree, very high coconut tree without any rope. And like, oh, and this, I never seen that before. And then on the other side, his relative catching the octopus on the sea. So it was really crazy experience, like one guy climbed the coconut tree and one guy was like catching the octopus and so much loving the kids. That was amazing experience so far. Even maybe it's one of the most highlights of my trip. They are greeting every time, blah, blah, blah. And I love it so much. You know, I'm cycling slowly. Sometimes I cycle slow on purpose to greet, blah. So I love their blah so much.
And while you've been in Vanuatu, what's been some of the interesting highlights or stories or adventures you've been on there?
So in Vanuatu, I was cycling around Efate. Efate is the main island where Kepta is. And I was cycling, and one night I asked, oh, can I set up a tent at local people's house? And they offered me some meat, and it was a bat.
A bat? How was it cooked?
It was a barbecue. It was a barbecue. At the time, I was thinking it's a chicken, oh, and then, wow, what a nice people, you know? And also, I was thinking to share about my cookies, what I brought something from the supermarket, or let's share things. And then they said, oh, it's a bat. Oh, we just hunted it. It's very, very tough to eat. The meat is very hard. And then they brought the scissors. Okay, let me cut. Because they know that it's very hard to, it's hard to like take off the bones from the main part.
So some pretty memorable experiences in Vanuatu so far, and you've only just landed there as well. Once you've finished your travels in Vanuatu, do you plan to visit all the other Pacific countries?
There's one challenging thing to travel in the Pacific is every country is island, and it's very difficult to travel with my bicycle. So I really love to visit every single country, especially when I was in Fiji. I met many different Pacific people like Solomon, Samoa, Nauru. So I love to visit, you know, this country, but it's very difficult. So I don't know if someone offered me a sailing boat. Then, yeah, I love to visit every country, so please support me in sailing boat. But if I can't get any sailing boat, maybe next country will be Samoa.
Jin Jung there. If you have a sailing boat for her, do get in touch. She was speaking about her travels, cycling all around the world with reporter Jordan Fennell. She is currently in the Pacific and biking through Vanuatu. I'm curious how she funds her journeys as well. Maybe it's the cynic in me to try and find out about the money there. But maybe she had some answers on her YouTube page. You can follow her journey. It's called Universe With Me.
Pacific Beat.
It's been more than 50 years since humans were last sent to the moon, but NASA hopes to make it happen again very soon and perhaps even take us to Mars. The first step in that project will take off in the form of NASA's most powerful rocket yet. Isabel Musali has the report, but just a quick note on the launch. It has been delayed due to engine issues and will no longer take place today, as reported.
As NASA employees gather in Florida, the countdown is on and the excitement is high.
I am ecstatic. I have all my fingers crossed for this launch. One, because I'm here, so I'll be able to see it.
You know, when we look at this spacecraft, we're seeing history. This is something that's going to be taught in history books someday. And I don't know if the folks that worked Apollo ever stepped back to think about the history they were making, but I try to take that and just step back and just see. This is an incredible impact that this spacecraft will have on the world and children all across the world.
The first rocket in NASA's Artemis project is preparing for liftoff at 10:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time. It's expected to be a 42-day journey to the moon and back, and with only mannequins on board. Swinburne University astrophysicist Dr. Sarah Webb explains.
And it is going to be absolutely incredible because it is the first testing stage of two different systems. So we've got the Space Launch System, which is the massive rocket that is able to fuel things beyond Earth's orbit. And then also the Orion capsule, which is on top of the rocket. And that will be what is doing the round of the moon. So this rocket that we're going to see is the most powerful rocket that humans have ever put together. It is an absolute beast of a rocket. Inside it will be over almost 3 million litres of fuel, lots and lots of fuel, liquid and hydrogen. And when it burns that fuel in the first 12 minutes of launch, it will be reaching speeds up to 27,000 kilometres an hour. Incredibly fast and incredibly powerful.
This is the first stage in a long-awaited project aimed at returning humans to the moon and paving the way for further exploration. NASA soon aims to land the first woman and person of colour on the moon. The last people to set foot were part of the Apollo 17 program 50 years ago.
A very small sample size, a very small amount of people who've been able to explore, and a small amount of science that we were able to bring back with us. And that has gotten us through the last 50 or so years with incredible finds from everything that the Apollo program did. But we're ready for the next stage. We're ready to have more inclusivity on the moon, more people go to the moon, more science to be done on the moon, and maybe even long-term living on the lunar surface, which I am very excited about.
While tonight's rocket will be unmanned and designed to test a range of technologies, Dr. Webb says we won't have to wait too long for more exciting parts of the program.
So around 2024 is the estimated time frame for when we should see the first human stepping back onto the lunar surface. So really within only a couple of years. Around 2030, so within the next decade or so, the Artemis program is aiming to be able to get to Mars, whether that be an orbital flight with humans on board or the very first landing. So within the next decade, we're going to see an incredible amount of very exciting launches happen.
Hundreds of thousands of people have travelled to the launch site in Florida tonight, including the head of the Australian Space Agency, Enrico Palermo. He told RN, Australia will play a vital role in the mission.
So on this flight, the Canberra Deep Space Communication Complex, which is run by the CSIRO, is supporting the mission. So about 50 minutes after the launch tomorrow morning, if everything goes to plan, they will acquire the signal in Canberra, which is outside Canberra, and communicate and really support the voyage from launch all the way to splashdown. And then later in the mission, the rocket will be releasing a small fleet of miniature satellites that we call CubeSats, and the Deep Space Complex will also support tracking and communications with those satellites.
That was head of the Australian Space Agency, Enrico Palermo, Isabel Musali, ending that with that report. And a note again about that launch that was mentioned there. It was due today, but it has been delayed because of engine issues.
ABC Radio Australia is your home for rugby league in the Pacific.
He takes two men over the line and scores.
This Thursday night, the Parramatta Eels take on the Melbourne Storm.
Dives over one-handed and scores in the corner. Beautiful stuff.
Don't miss a thing.
The Eels versus the Storm.
This Thursday night at 7 p.m. PNG time.
Right here on ABC Radio Australia.
Goes himself. Touchdown under the black dot.
Your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
You are right here on ABC Radio Australia, but you're listening to Pacific Beat. I'm your host, Priyanka Srinivasan. And for seasonal workers returning to their islands after time in Australia or New Zealand, it can be difficult to figure out what's next. But one Ni Vanuatu mum and daughter duo had an enterprising idea to create a business out of selling waste products. This morning, we're joined by the daughter behind that project, Joshebed William. Good morning to you, Joshebed.
Good morning.
So tell me about what your business idea with your mum is. How do you convert these waste products to something that you can sell?
We're doing upcycling. It's similar to recycle, but we just use the waste products as it is and we create something new out of it. Example for a bag. We used a bag, empty bag of rice, and we just added a zipper to it and do a handle, and we just decorate it. So it's a new bag. So we use any waste product and we create something out of it.
Well, and who are the people who buy these products?
Anyone wanting a unique product or as a gift, they usually message us, and then we create anything from. We also customize it. So yes.
And I understand, Joshebed, your mum was doing seasonal work before she started this business with you. How was that transition like? How did she have the idea, or how did you both have the idea to do something like this?
Okay, so my mum was one of the returnees. So being back for after so many years, VLAB organized returnees trainings, and we applied for it, and then she got accepted, and I was fortunate to be her partner. And we went through trainings on how to run a business and finance courses and everything. So then the business idea came about. And we finally registered the business and got our license.
And how was that for you? I've heard of some seasonal workers using the money that they earn overseas to invest in businesses similar to yours. Is that something that your mum was able to do, to use the money earned to put into a new business idea?
Unfortunately, my mum returned like a few years ago. So she went there while we were still in school to support us, like financially for our school fees, tuition fees. So then she's just staying back and being a housewife. So then the program launched for the first cohort of the return seasonal workers. So she applied for it, and we've got a few grants that they've helped us to kickstart our business to register it and help us with some of the few assets we have now.
And your female-run business with you and your mum working on this idea, is that common in Vanuatu? Do you have a lot of women doing similar things?
Yes, but I haven't seen some that are doing similar things to us. Now I've just heard that there's a few ladies also doing recycling like us. So it's new like for us to go about in this business, because we have the main, the bigger companies here, the Recycle Corp. So for us, the little business, like there's a few women that are doing recycling also now.
If you are just joining us here on Pacific Beat, we're speaking with Joshebed William. She's one half of this new business to sell waste products and convert, as we were hearing, like rice bags, you were saying, Joshebed, to convert those into bags and other items, this recycling business. Has it been hard to get support and make your business work? Can you tell us about some of the challenges you faced?
Yes. It's hard because we have no capital to start off with. So we have to push our hands in our own pockets to support us. So I'm also working and helping out part-time. And all our products are handmade. So it also takes time for us to do them when we have time. And we really need support from the other established women in business to help and encourage us and give us some tips on how we can continue with this business. Because I think our main idea is because we're looking around, we saw that we are going through so much like climate change and all this. So we want to help reduce that by doing upcycling. And our future plan is also to go to the communities and teach them some ideas on how they can use the waste products to help them sustain their living and also reduce climate change.
Yes. Well, if there are any women in business listening, perhaps they can get in touch and help you, Joshebed. I mean, has that been some of the difficulties trying to, balance costs and get your business up and running? Do either of you have much experience in running a business?
No, it's our first time and we're still learning. We're still trying to get our equipment and also to upgrade the standard or the quality of our products. So we're learning and we're still trying our best to use the passion we have and give the best to our customers.
Yes, I've been considering those challenges, and it is so hard to start a business. I've never done it, but I can imagine it's a daunting task. What motivates you? Why do you have that passion to do this, to get into this business?
Growing up, Dad is the only one that is working and helping out, so Mom is back at home. And we don't have that much to go about, but Mom uses anything around the house to beautify the house or to put a smile on our faces. So when I was still in school and then I was looking around and Mom was doing all this stuff. So I was like, okay, I can do that. So I started off by doing mini bags from empty carton of shapes boxes. And then it turned out to other stuffs as well and to home decorations. And then I was looking around in town and all those stuffs are so expensive. So I wanted to have, as a teenager, I wanted to have those things in my room also. So I was like, why not? I'll just create my own. So that's when this idea came about and it turned into a business last year after participating in the first cohort of the returnees.
And starting your business last year during the pandemic, before tourists were coming in, was that difficult for you?
Yes, it's a bit difficult. The business is slow, but yeah, we managed to get through, and with the few connections that we're making now, yes, business is picking up. So yes. Thank you.
Well, that's good news. And do you have any advice, Joshebed, for other women who might be interested in making their hobby a business as well?
Yes. I think I just want to say continue with the passion that you have and do your best no matter what people say or they think about what you're doing. Just aim and have a goal that it's set out for you to achieve and work on it. It's not too late to start your business. We're all learning. It's a part of our journey. So a heads up and keep pushing. You're going to get there one day.
Yes, wonderful message there. And what's next for you and your mum, Joshebed?
We're still having our business run at our home. So we want to have our own shop set up somewhere. And in the future, maybe we want to educate the communities as well to use whatever waste products they have and turn it into something useful.
Oh, wonderful. Well, all the best to you and your mom starting that business. Thank you so much. And yes, thank you to Mas Blo, Time Blow You this morning on Pacific Beat.
Thank you so much.
That was Joshebed William, the daughter behind this mum and daughter project there in Vanuatu to create products out of waste.
Celebrate the pride of the Pacific.
You know, we're proud of our country and our heritage.
Stay up to date with all the latest sporting news.
So emotional every time you go out there and you sing the national anthem.
And hear inspiring stories from some of the Pacific's finest athletes.
I've grown so much confidence within myself and I never thought I would be the player that I am today.
Watch That Pacific Sports Show Wednesday nights at 7 PNG time on ABC Australia.
And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. Just to remind you of the top stories today, Papua New Guinea's government has launched an investigation into the death of an Indonesian man allegedly shot while fishing in PNG waters. And Indonesia has responded with a diplomatic protest, not just over that death, but also the detention of more than a dozen Indonesian fishermen in Papua New Guinea. We also heard from Foreign Minister Penny Wong, who is in Papua New Guinea at the moment for her first diplomatic visit there. And ABC Pacific, it's been a week since we launched this new digital site. And just before we finish up the show, I wanted to ask you, listeners, how it's going. Have you checked it out? Have you stumbled across our Facebook pages, our new Twitter handle? It's all ABC Pacific, new logo. What do you reckon? How's it looking? These things sometimes take a while to smooth over. So if you've noticed any glitches, anything you think we can do better, please do get in touch. You can find all our contact details at ABC Pacific. Just type in ABC Pacific into your search engine. It should take you to us. Otherwise, we're on all those social media platforms, your Facebooks, your Twitters. You can find us again at ABC Pacific or reach out to me directly at I Am Priyanka. I'll be back same time tomorrow, 6 a.m. PNG time. Can't wait for it.